from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's a trending topic for demographers and the public. Americans going child-free. Why? Well, there's money. There's a sense that we've got enough people on the planet. There's lifestyle. And, of course, there are implications. This hour, On Point, the child-free path in America. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you child-free by choice? Do you plan to stay that way? Why? What's pushing the trend? Where does it take us? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're watching, we're reading at On Point Radio. With me now from Martha's Vineyard is writer Lauren Sandler, author of the big Time magazine cover story, Having It All Without Having Children. She's also author of the new book, One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One. Lauren Sandler, thanks very much for being with us. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you here. And with us from Washington is Devera Cohn. She is senior writer at the Pew Research Center's Social and Demographic Trends Project. She's also former demographics reporter for The Washington Post. Devera, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Devera, give us the numbers first. What's going on here? I mean, I think the broad stroke we read was 1 in 10 women in 1970 did not have a child. Within the last couple of years, it's 1 in 5. Is that a big shift in demographic terms?
Yes, it's quite notable, and even more so is the groups that are showing this increase or decrease. There are big differences by education levels, by race, by ethnicity that I can go into a little later if you'd like.
No, let's do it right now. I mean, who's not having babies?
Well, if you look at education levels, that's really the most striking number to me. Women who have advanced degrees or college degrees are the most likely not to have children. Their numbers are 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 even among women with master's degrees or advanced degrees beyond that.
That is 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 choose or don't have a child.
Yes, and it is important, without going too far down this road, to note that these numbers include women who are involuntarily childless.
Fertility so issues, let's say. Okay.
Yes, okay. And also they might include women who are mothers by adoption or by being a stepmom. These are only women who have not had a biological child.
Okay, so 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 among the most educated women in this country.
Yes, that's right. But when you get down to women who are, for example, don't even have a high school education, only 15% do not have biological children. So there's a big gap.
Mm-hmm.
But what we found actually is that that childlessness or child freeness, however you want to describe it, is actually down among women who are the most educated. That is, it's the levels are lower now than they were a few years ago, whereas they have risen since the early 90s for women who are less educated.
So childbearing making a little comeback among the educated, but still they've got the highest rate of it, and the less educated, a little more child-free life going on.
That's right. That's right. And then, of course, there are also pretty substantial differences by race. White women are the least likely to have children, or the most likely to be childless, about 20%, compared with Asian women, Asian American women, and Hispanic women, and Black women. Only 16% or 17% are childless. But again, the racial and ethnic gap is closing. We found that women who are non-white are somewhat more likely to be childless than in the past, but the childless rate for white women isn't increasing as quickly.
And just to hit it again, I mean, when Lauren Sandler in Time magazine put it on the cover, you know, this like super carefree couple lying in beautiful sandy beach, no kids or little footprints in sight, it gets everybody's attention. But you're saying for demographers, too, this is a big enough shift in American childbearing that it's got your attention.
Certainly. And, you know, it is part of a broader issue. It's not just women without children, but women choosing to have smaller families. You know, it used to be that in the mid-70s, the most common number of children to have would be four or more. Now it's two children. And, of course, as Lauren has shown in her book, you know, the one-child family is becoming more popular, and then, of course, families with no children or women who have no children or men with no children.
Yeah, Lauren, you've written in your book about only children, but this cover story in Time takes it all the way. This is to men, women, couples who just aren't having kids at all. What did you find were the major things driving this trend, Lauren?
Well, I think there are a number of things. First of all, in terms of being child-free, there are certain trends, and then being childless, meaning you're not making such a conscious choice, but it's happening to you via biology or just life marching on without a kid. Those can be some different issues. So it does seem that one of the main reasons that we have fewer and fewer children right now is actually related to postponement, that we're searching for the right partner, we're searching for the right financial stability, for the right moment in our career, and that tends to minimize our childbearing years radically, either to zero or to one.
Right.
That said, that also means that our priorities are changing. For a lot of people, and a lot of women in particular, adulthood was always equated with parenthood first. You know, you of course needed to work, especially if you were a man, but the notion of an adulthood without the duty of child rearing was pretty unthinkable for most of the course of human history. Mm. And obviously that has radically changed in the past couple of generations. So that's something that I really wanted to look at, what that freedom feels like, what that choice means in a society that even though we do encourage independence, though we do measure success based on those terms, we still expect people to be parents and especially mothers. So I was very curious what it means to opt out of motherhood in a culture that mandates it.
Let's put infertility aside for a minute here and maybe even postponement, though we get that these bleed together. But for women, men, couples who simply decide they don't want to have kids, they're not going to have kids, what did you find are the motivators for that decision, Lauren?
Well, there are a number of things. One is that there's some research done that show that childbearing desire exists on a spectrum. So it's much like the Kinsey scale, actually, is sort of how I think about it. Some people really don't want it. Some people want a bunch of kids, and most of us fall in between.
You mean just a kind of innate desire?
Exactly.
Without any
calculating. Biological drive, what I think a lot of people think of as their clock ticking, if they're women.
Okay.
There are a lot of women who said to me, I keep waiting for that TikTok, and it's not happening.
Hearing it. Okay.
And there does seem to be a biological basis for that, but culture is also a powerful motivator.
Mm-hmm.
So for a lot of people who haven't felt that, the voices out there saying, be a mom, do it, you're never ready, just jump, that has motivated a lot of people to have kids in the past. And right now, it seems that there are more people who are saying, you know, I don't want it. I feel strong enough in my own life and in my own choices to say I feel fulfilled without it. And therefore, I'm not taking that step.
Is it an economic decision? We saw these numbers just out this week from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Cost an estimated $241,000 for a middle-income couple to raise a child for 18 years. And that doesn't include the cost of college. Are people saying, I can't afford children, Lauren?
There are a lot of people who are saying that, though I do think that people who really want children tend to find a way to afford it. I think that if it's something that you're ambivalent about, you need to want it more than ever because the cost of raising children has so far outpaced inflation, it would make your head spin.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at where we are at in the larger economy, fertility always tanks along with finances. And so it's no surprise that these things go hand in hand. But a lot of people just explain this in terms of economics, and I think that there are much larger social and cultural factors in play, and that really relates to what it means to be a woman who is defining an adulthood not as a mother first, and that's a big change.
Are there, I don't know, kind of enviro-ethical issues here? I mean, you look back at Genesis in the Bible, be fruitful and multiply, teem on the earth and multiply in it. We've done that, you know, we're billions and billions of us. Are people saying we just don't want to leave that extra footprint or footprints on the earth?
There are people who say that, but I have found in my research over the years that I don't always trust that argument. I think it's a very sound argument, but I think that if you have the drive, you have a kid. And if you don't, you understand why there is a benefit beyond yourself to not having a kid. And it's something that isn't necessarily pushing your fertility in one direction or another, but making sense of a larger good of it.
And do you have the sense that people going without children these days, do they run up against a stigma? Do they feel it? Or is culture let go of that at this point?
People tell me they feel it all the time. And in fact, a lot of women have told me that they feel it more than ever. It's interesting, you know, we're living in this moment where there are more child-free women, but there is also a culture of intensive mothering, which is ascendant. You know, it used to be that if you didn't want to have a kid, fine, maybe you'd move to New York and smoke cigarettes in the back of a coffee house and people would leave you alone. Right. And now, you know, I live in Brooklyn, in as close to where that culture may have resided as possible. And it's all veggie booty and expensive strollers and an alternative subculture, which is really pushing an intensive mothering environment. And I think that a lot of people feel like there's nowhere to turn.
I mean, if you're not mommied up, you're in trouble with your peers, Lauren?
Well, you're frankly excluded from the larger conversation about being an adult female right now. I mean, our larger cultural conversation is about what we call the work-life balance, but what we really mean is the work-mothering balance. We don't talk about much beyond that.
Yeah.
And within a culture that congratulates motherhood so much, I don't think there's a lot of place for people to find meaning outside of it in larger cultural validation.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Americans going child-free by choice. The numbers of childless, child-free women are way up. We've got couples going another way, child-free, childless, by choice. Here's a May 2011 interview with CNN's Piers Morgan talking with comedian Chelsea Handler about why she doesn't want kids.
I feel like, you know, some people just have a child because they think it's time. Oh, I'm going to be, you know, I'm in my late 30s. I should have a baby because what if
but
I can't
you,
have
aren't
one?
Aren't you basically articulating the great modern dilemma for successful women is that they talk themselves perhaps into this mindset that I can't do this because it will suck my energy out of where it should be, which is my work.
Perhaps. Yeah, I mean, that's not really my mindset. I just don't want a baby.
There's the work-life thing from Piers Morgan, but Chelsea's saying, look, I'm just not inclined that way. Lauren Sandler is with us this hour. She's author of the book One and Only about single children. This time she's writing about the child-free life, her big Time magazine cover story, When Having It All Means Not Having Children. She joins us from Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. And Devera Cohn is with us, senior writer at the Pew Research Center's Social and Demographic Trends Project. Just a great demographer there, and a pleasure to have her with us. Laura Scott will join us in a second from Tampa, Florida. Lauren and Devera, though, I want to share with you on our Facebook page, On Point Radio, we asked people, we said, are you child-free by choice? And boy, oh boy, did we get an outpouring of response. And let me just share some of it to get your commentary here. Joe wrote to us, yes, because we have no confidence in the ability of our economy to provide sufficient opportunity to raise children in a safe, economically secure environment. Also, we like to sleep late on weekends. Okay. Genevieve says, our friends with kids seem pretty miserable. Sarah wrote to us, at 32 and 36, my husband and I are still on the fence, but lean slightly toward the child-free side. We like our freedom. We worry about not being able to financially support a family. It's interesting how so many people, from family members to friends to coworkers, cast judgment on us for not having children and are certain we'll come to our senses and one day realize what we're missing. Sarah says, really? Ursula says, babies are cute, but the time, energy, and resources that go into raising one and with no guarantee of the eventual outcome are not worth it. I mean, and on it goes here. I mean, there's some warnings, too, in a couple of directions. Benjamin says there are more than enough people on this planet. Number one and number two, babies are disgusting. Okay, I don't think so, but some people may. John says the world is already overpopulated. The American way of life is not sustainable. If you're really a friend of the environment, you won't have offspring. But then Barbie wrote to us, Lauren Devera, she says, six of us in the car together as we speak. Zero children. We're on a whitewater rafting trip. None of us were willing to give up this kind of freedom for kids. No regrets. That's from Barbie. Lauren, there's the straight-up lifestyle argument for this. Look, you know, you're going to save a lot of money and have a lot more freedom. Let's go. How widespread did you find that, Lauren?
I found that pretty commonly, actually. It's interesting. I think that people assume that with women, it's often a career-motivated choice, and I looked for that, and I didn't really find it. I found people who say, I really like my life the way it is. I like my independence. I like my economic freedom. I like to be able to hop on a plane when I want to, or have cocktails with friends, or, you know, as Barbie said, go whitewater rafting. And if you call that selfish, then fine, I'm happy with the label. Although there are plenty of people who are also not happy with the label and say, what's the issue with living life on my own terms?
Devera, you know, demographics and economics tend to get together at a certain point. Are there economic implications for the country down the road if we have fewer people having children?
Well, there certainly is a debate about what the economic implications are. There are some people who say that with fewer children in general growing up in this country, that we won't have enough of a workforce to sustain our economy. There are others who say, well, existing workers can be more productive or work longer into their later years, which many already are doing. So that's certainly a debate. It also has, I guess, implications for immigration, and here's what they are. You know, the Census Bureau recently put out a report that said for the first time since at least the middle of the 1800s, immigration, not births, will be the major driver of U.S. population growth by the middle of the century.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is because overall fertility is down, that is, women not having any children or having smaller families, and if immigration holds steady, even if it holds steady, it will become the major factor in increasing population size in this country. So immigration policy then begins to play a role in this issue.
I mean, you've got some countries, Germany, where the population is really falling, Japan, where they sell now, I read somewhere, more adult diapers than baby diapers. And some economists say this is a calamity. You don't have enough people to support your oldsters. You don't have enough working hands in the working world, Devera?
Well, certainly, in comparison with other developed countries, the U.S. has higher what are called fertility rates. Our women have more children over their lifetime, mm-hmm, on average than do women in most other developed countries. And I can throw some numbers out at you. There's,
yeah,
a measure called total fertility rate, and this is how many children will the average woman have over her childbearing lifetime. And in the U.S., it's just at about 2, maybe a little higher, and
okay,
same in France, actually. But at the bottom of the heap, you have Singapore, where the average woman will have 0.8. Of course, you can't have a 0.8 at,
wow,
the age of a child.
Okay.
You average 0.8. Japan, it's 1.4. Italy, 1.4. Germany, 1.4. Spain, 1.5.
Okay.
And so on. So, there are a lot of explanations for this that people have ventured. One is that immigration rates in the U.S. are higher, and birth rates of immigrants in the U.S. are higher than of U.S.-born women, and that's helping to keep our fertility levels higher than elsewhere. Some people argue that the higher levels of religious belief and practice in, mm-hmm, the U.S., which religion is associated with having more kids, also are keeping our fertility rates higher. So they're, compared with other developed countries, our rates are actually much higher.
Of course, Singapore, with that very low rate, what was it, a few years ago, they went on a huge campaign to get people to reproduce more.
And it didn't work.
And they especially went after their most educated citizens. You know, they were very plain about it. You know, they said, we want our college grads to be, you know, breeding like bunnies here. And they were tough about it. Didn't work.
There's mixed results with those kinds of incentives. The number of European countries have tried different things, and, you know, it may have helped things from declining, but it didn't raise things all that much. Mm. The exception possibly is France. As I mentioned, their levels are about what ours are.
Of course, they make everything so easy with all that daycare laid on and lots of child support through everybody's young life.
Yes, and they also have a large immigrant population,
yeah.
That may be helping to keep their levels high, too.
We have so many callers here. Let me bring them to you, Devera and Lauren. Rebecca in Lexington, Kentucky. Rebecca, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's your story?
Yeah, when I was talking to your caller receiver, I mentioned that I'm 55. My mom was born in 1919. I made the decision, I was probably 14 when I went, the thought of having kids was really not something in my future. And I've pretty much stuck with that. And I think part of the reason might be is that I detected and understood from my mother, she should have been a career woman. If she had been born in this generation, she might never have gotten married.
Mm-hmm.
But she married, had three kids, and did the domestic thing. And I could detect all through my childhood and into my adult years that she was an unfulfilled human being. And it was a point of sadness to me that this was the case. But I think I picked up on those signals young. And when I hit my late 30s, I decided to revisit the conversation with my husband just to see if this was the right move. And we came to the same conclusion. He was fine either way. He would have been fine with being a dad or not being a dad, but it was me. And I'm very content. And I've never felt any of the judgment by other people, whether I did or not. People are surprised, but nothing beyond that.
Rebecca, I really appreciate your sharing that story right there. Thank you, Rebecca. Lauren, at age 14, she knew. And the feeling essentially, it sounds like, never went away. I think I read in your story that for many women in particular, if they're not inclined, they know it early.
Yeah, they're called early adopters, and they're people who often, I found in my reporting, don't play with dolls and aren't really thrilled about playing family, as my daughter calls it, with their friends, really aren't nuts about babysitting, and just kind of feel like it's not for them. This story that the caller just told reminded me of something I think of a lot, which is that just as I think it's very painful for people who desperately want children not to have them, I think that it's also really difficult for people who don't want children to have them. And that's something that we've done for a very, very long time, is whether you want them or not, you follow through with that expectation. And I think that way of living can be quite difficult.
And then there's the work question that comes up right there. I mean, having it all is the cover line on the front of your magazine, but it doesn't mean work and baby. It means something different. What about women and work in this choice, Lauren?
Well, talking about the total fertility rates of other countries, I think, is especially interesting when you think about what their family policies look like. And in the parts of Europe that have higher fertility, in most of those cases, they've figured out that providing really full and effective childcare for when people are working, having really good health care, having situations set up to help reconcile the conflict between parenthood and work is really pushing people to be a little bit more open to having kids. It doesn't feel quite so much like, as a child-free friend of mine said last week, giving up and throwing it all away. It does seem like there's a reason that parents are so stretched thin in this country. And I do think that has a lot to do with the fact that we give such little support. And in countries that give more support, people are a little bit more open to taking the leap, whether they're 100% with it or not.
Joe writes to us on the Facebook page. He says, having kids is akin to instant poverty in this country. So why have them? Big question mark. Alicia on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Alicia, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. You know, as a mom of two young girls, I was in the middle of my starting my career in an accounting firm in Boston, and found out 3 weeks after I was married that I was pregnant, and it was an unintentional pregnancy.
Hello.
I felt, a lot of obviously pressure. You know, I'm Catholic, and it just having an abortion wasn't an option. But I certainly was nowhere near ready to have children. 6 years later, it's an amazing experience, but I think I could have been one of those people who never had children had my sort of family planning been a little more, a little more planned out. And there is a lot of culture to, there's a lot of pressure in our culture to, and then once you have a child, to have another. When are you having your second? When are you having your third? And there really isn't the support structure set up to give these women support when they're trying to work and have a family. So I can completely understand why women are choosing to opt out.
pregnant 3 weeks into your marriage. And it's funny, with a little more time to contemplate, you think you might have gone the other way. Well, a little late for that, but enjoy those kids, Alicia. I appreciate your call. We'll look more at that cultural pressure and career issues front. Jason in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Thanks for calling, Jason. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks very much for taking my call. Yeah. First, I think the world of you and On Point. So,
you're very kind.
But what I wanted to share is a very thought-provoking subject, in no small part because I'm a stay-at-home dad.
Okay.
But also, just on the side, I'm open to both points of view, but I really want to plant the flag on the side of parenthood. Basically, for me, parenting has certainly been frustrating and very challenging through the journey, but it's also been the most rewarding, enriching experience of my life. The thought that other people wouldn't, you know, get to experience that, you know, it would be great if everyone could experience that. Also, something else I want to share is that you get to, I guess from a broader perspective, you get to play a very powerful role in shaping someone else's life.
Yeah, and, I mean, Jason, amen. I've got three kids. I absolutely adore being a parent. And I hear that maybe you're in that same camp. I mean, I love having kids. My wife says we should have had six or eight. But are you judging people who don't, Jason, or just, you know, holding a flag for the pleasure side of it?
Oh, yeah, no judgment at all. We've got friends that are, I guess you'd call childless and have made that choice. My wife is a doctor of oral medicine by the same token, and she's been instrumental in helping women, even in their early 50s, become pregnant. So certainly open to it and not judging it. Just from what I've experienced on a personal level, what I've taken from it, it's been remarkable. And then also just the idea that maybe, hopefully, my wife and I are bringing two kids into the world that will have a very powerful, positive effect in the world. And earlier callers have mentioned that have kind of framed the argument in terms of, well, we live in a world with limited resources. Look at what we're doing.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think that just all of us could just be smarter people, and there's enough, margin for us to just make smarter decisions as we go through our day that would help our planet. You know,
I hear it loud and clear. Jason, go forth and raise some great kids. I really appreciate your call there from New Mexico. I mean, Lauren, it's interesting, so much response to your piece in Time Magazine. Looking on Yahoo here, Sarah Weir's writing about a kind of resentment here. You know, you've got these childless people laying on the beach, you know, not a care in the world. And she writes, they have matching sort of teal swimsuits. The matching swimsuits reek of self-satisfied, in-your-face dinks. Double income, no kids. How much of that resentment did you find of this crowd, Lauren?
I do think that there's been a line drawn in our culture where you are a parent or you're not. And there's a lot of judgment and assessment on either side, which I don't think is really helping anyone. It does seem that you are picking which sanctimony you choose to subscribe to.
Right.
And I think that if we could think about things on more individual terms with some greater respect for each other, we might not quite have the mommy wars that we have. We might not quite have the difficult relationships that we have with people who make other choices, and that the stigma on both sides might dial down a little bit. Because I think we're at a very bizarre moment right now in our culture around issues of parenthood that doesn't really feel like feminism or friendship to me, frankly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Americans going child-free by choice. Lauren Sandler is with us, wrote the big cover story on Time Magazine, Having It All Without Children. You can link to that story at our website, onpointradio.org. She's also author of One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One. Devera Cohn joins us from Washington. She's at the Pew Research Center's Social and Demographic Trends Project. She's looking at the numbers in detail and the large arc, and is really great at it. With us right now from Tampa, Florida, is Laura Scott. She's author of Two is Enough, as in Two Parents, I guess. Two is Enough, A Couple's Guide to Living Childless by Choice. Laura Scott, thank you very much for being with us today. Thanks a lot for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
Are you promoting the child-free life with your book, Laura?
Absolutely not. I'm exploring it.
Okay.
I myself am childless by choice.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am also a reproductive decision-making coach, and I am totally neutral on what decisions you make. I tell my clients, I want what you want for you. And I have done a lot of research on the childless by choice demographic, and I'm basically observing that the question, when are we going to have kids, has morphed into should we have kids? And that is what's driving the postponement and the lower birth numbers.
That is so right interesting. Now. Let me give you a couple. A flood keeps coming in here to us. This is from Twitter, just while we've been, last couple of minutes here. Amy writes, I'm child-free by choice, love nieces and nephews and friends' kids, but children don't fit my life. Satisfied without them. But Brad writes to us, parenting does not mean loss of freedom. It's freedom of a different kind, to teach, play, and engage differently with the world. There must be a ton of perspectives that come to this question that you see, Laura.
Absolutely. And, you know, the motives for the child-free are not typically a dislike of children. I hear this a lot. I said, I like children. I just don't want to own one. There are a lot of people who are making the choice to remain childless who are teachers and who are child advocates and daycare workers. I interviewed a number of them for my film. And these are people that are actively seeking careers that take them in daily involvement with children. So there's different ways to, so to speak, parent, whether it be parent biological children or be a mentor to someone else's child.
I mean, women bear the children. They actually have them. So there's a lot of focus, and the demographics, tend to go to those numbers. What about the father part of this equation? Do you see women as more resistant or more open to the child-free life, or men, or what about that, Laura?
Men are actually very much in this decision-making. A number of my clients and also the people I interviewed for the Childless by Choice Project took a very active role in taking control of their reproductive lives. So men, I've met a number of men who made the choice to have a vasectomy even before they partnered up, because they wanted to take real control of their reproductive lives. And so in the terms of partnerships, I studied couples. I studied married and common law couples, and men were very much part of the decision-making and part of the conversation on this.
Who seems to be, Lauren, let me bring that one to you. Did you talk with both genders, and did you get a sense of who's more inclined to say, hey, let's go child-free?
When I initially started my reporting about a year ago, I spoke to men, but the story really focused on what it means for women to opt out of motherhood in our ascendant mother culture. However, I did find the same spectrum of men that we have of women. I mean, there are plenty of men who are single or are with women who would prefer not to have kids, or women who have biological barriers who really yearn for children. And there are men who don't want kids and are single and feel like they have to be out about it on a first date. And it can be a very complicated thing for men as well.
Are there people who are just going to drop, somebody on that first date if they're not lined up with their childbearing or opposite expectations, Lauren?
If you are dating in your mid to late 30s or early 40s, I certainly heard plenty of stories of people who thought that was just a deal breaker from jump.
Let's go to Mike in Franklin, Tennessee. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call. Love the show.
Thank you.
Wow, so many things to address. My wife and I are child-free by choice. We have the conversation several times a year, and it basically goes like this. So are we still no? Oh, yeah, okay, great. And, we move on. Some of our friends who are our age, have 1, 2, 3 kids. They don't seem to judge us. If they do, we don't feel it, and quite frankly, we don't care. We don't judge them for having kids. And for us, it's kind of a situation where, we don't think that we want to be parents right now. We don't think that we'd be good parents right now. Some of it's money. I understand everybody says, it's never exactly the right time. There's never enough money in the bank. I get it. Well, I think eventually for us, there might be. I'm working on my pre-med degree. I'm going back to school. I'm going to become an MD. And when that happens, if we decide to have children of our own, that'll be great. I'll be able to be the kind of parent I want to be. And if we don't have kids, there are just so many children in the world who need parents. And I think that a lot of people need to consider that, and perhaps that they could do more good by being parents to children that don't have them rather than you know, trying to have their own babies. Not that there's anything wrong with having your own babies. You want to do it, go ahead.
Hey, Mike, okay, I get it. You're 36. You're going pre-med. That can be a long road. How late are you willing to wait to make your final decision? You've got a little more time maybe as a man. On the other hand, your wife is younger.
Well, my wife is 29 for the somethingest time. You know, I understand that biology, you know, works. It starts to work against you at the end of it. But, you know, my mother had me quite late. She was, I believe she was 40. My father was 43 or so. And, you know, that was 36 years ago. You know, medical technology has come quite a long way. It only is going to get better. And like I said, if it's not in the cards, we're not going to sit here and wring our hands about it because, you know, we made our bet for now. We are lying in it quite contentedly. Yeah. And if we decide to change our minds later and biology says, nope, it's not going to happen that way, like I said, there's
so be it.
Plenty of other things that can be done.
Right. Mike, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Laura, that postponement, I suppose, in itself can then turn into going child-free.
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, the trend of postponement of marriage and child-rearing is really driving this idea of parenthood as a choice. So if you're, you know, 14 to 18 years old and childless, parenthood is an abstract idea. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're 35, parenthood has a deadline attached to it, the fertility deadline. So no longer is the idea of raising a family in the realm of the abstract. But I did hear a lot of people in my project, the Childless by Choice Project, who said, you know, maybe we'll change our mind. But if we do, we'll adopt. So there is the, you know, most people do not change their mind. Most people do not regret their choice.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do, they're not looking to biologically have a child. They're looking for how can we nurture and how can we express that nurturing value? Can we mentor? Can we adopt? Can we foster? So there are other alternatives outside of rearing, birthing and rearing a biological child that puts you in, as our earlier caller said, in the powerful role of shaping someone else's life.
Yeah. Devera, I want to come back to you on this issue of fertility. We're talking maybe older child-rearing at some point, or maybe not at all, but in this lower rate of child-bearing, how big a role is fertility playing? Is the fertility of American women changing? Are there more infertility problems now, Devera?
Well, when you say infertility, you mean people who can't have children.
Yes, if that's the right word.
To.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the data aren't perfect on this. There's just some data that came out indicating that what's called impaired fecundity, which is you can't get pregnant or carry a baby full term, may have risen a little bit over the course of the 2000s. But on the other hand, there's some other data that says that among married women who are trying to get pregnant, the success rate is a little higher than it used to be. So it's hard to know. And then, of course, countering the medical issue is the fact that we now have more medical and other procedures that can help.
Interventions,
Right. And those are responsible for a growing share of births in women, especially from the mid-30s onward.
Laura Scott, have you found a difference in terms of male identity, female identity, in terms of the weightiness of this decision for a man, for a woman?
Absolutely. I think it is different. It has changed. So, for example, 50 years ago, if you had signed on for fatherhood, you probably never would have felt obligated to change a diaper or push a stroller. But that's not the case anymore. So,
no, ma'am.
When men are deciding whether or not to have children, they're signing on, you know, they're looking at the prospect of signing on for a co-parent role.
Yeah.
Much like our stay-at-home dad was talking about. So this is a different thing entirely. So men are the key decision makers. And it certainly, motherhood, parenthood is tied to female identity to a greater degree than it is male identity. But that is changing over the last 20 years. There are a lot of men who really see themselves taking an active role in parenting, and they are either signing on for that or saying no and opting out.
Men is the key decision makers? How do you know that? I mean, that's hard for me to picture. If a woman really wanted to have a baby, I know a lot of men who would have trouble withstanding that. Seems to me like women would be the key decision maker.
They're really, some men will acquiesce and they'll say, you know, I don't, either way, you choose.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
they, to a certain degree, they acknowledge that the woman is going to give birth, she's going to deliver, and she's going to have the primary caregiving responsibility, or not.
Mm.
So men tend to acquiesce a little bit more. However, if they are childless by choice, if they're an early articulator or an early adopter, they are generally the key decision makers. In fact, a lot of men post online their profiles, and a lot of my clients come to me, and they're in a situation where they don't want children, and their spouses or girlfriends do. And this is like, as Lauren said, could be a deal breaker. If you're not on the same page,
yeah, sure.
on parenthood, it's a real issue, and there's a lot of options for you.
Lauren Sandler, you quote Kathleen Gerson at NYU. Saying that women are living in a kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't social context these days. They're supposed to be, have independence and you know, be out there large and in charge. But then here comes this child issue. You write her saying, without independence, we're failures. With it, we're selfish. With it, as in, I guess, with freedom from children, we're selfish. That's a twist, Lauren.
It is a twist, and I think that it's one that most of us feel acutely, and it's certainly one of the issues that we have not reconciled yet in terms of how we think about women in our society and what women's freedom actually looks like.
Let's go to April in Savannah, Georgia. Lots of people experiencing all angles on this. April, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. What do you see?
Well, I'm pretty much all over the place on this issue because I always wanted to be a mom, always wanted four kids, got married about 26, I had infertility issues, started fertility treatments and got divorced instead, was a foster parent for a while, and experienced how difficult it was to be a single mom. And then after I'd been single and living alone without foster kids for a number of years, I just have come to love that life so much. And I've also had experiences that I think, that I wouldn't have had if I had stayed married or even had my own children. I've been a nanny to my brother's children for 1 year while his wife was still working, and have a special bond with those children because of that.
But you're 48, you said, April. So you're kind of
48.
You're moving out of this, or maybe you're out of this ballpark, and you're okay with it.
I'm out. I won't say that I haven't that I didn't go through periods of time where I felt like there's something wrong with me because, yeah. and that wasn't from anybody around me.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like, was there something wrong with me inside me that I no longer wanted this, that I don't want to get up on Saturday morning and go to ball games, which I'm sure I would be more than happy to do if they were my own children. But I'm also a teacher of preschool children with autism, and I get love for my kids every day, and I feel like that nurturing part of me is expressed.
Plenty of children around for you there, April. I appreciate your call. Lauren Sandler, are we moving into some kind of two-tiered society where we've got, you know, American parents who are, have the joys of child-rearing, but also grinding it out, you know, trying to make it all work and pay all those bills, $240,000 they're saying now, just to 18 and then college. And on the other side of the lane, you've got, the child-free larking around, headed off to Cancun and mixing martinis?
In practice, I don't think so, and I would hope not. But I do feel like ideologically that there has become an ideology of parenting and of the sacrifice of parenting, how mothering is the hardest job in the world. These are not terms that
are
we used to apply to parenting.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the notion of women who opt out of that or men who opt out of that is somehow more carefree and liberated. I do think that there is a line drawn, and I'm worried about it.
I mean, I worry a little bit, Laura Scott, that part of this is just the pressure of a tough economy and that, you know, I mean, God bless them. People make whatever decision they want, but I hate to see people cut off from it if they might have wanted it, just fearing it in economic terms. Parenthood, Laura.
You know, I think it does play into the postponement. I don't think it plays into the ultimate decision-making, however, because as we alluded to earlier, people who really, really want children will find a way to have them. They may not have as many. They may stop at one or two. But I don't think economics, in my research and in my practice, and then economics is a secondary motive, not a primary motive. So I don't think we need to worry about that. But I do think we need to concern ourselves about what we say or think about women and men who do not have children. Because if we believe that the only path to a happy and fulfilling life is through parenthood, then what do we say to the 20% or plus women globally that will never have children by choice or by circumstance?
Yeah.
That's what I worry about.
No, it's a big question. Devera, you look at the long arc of this. Are we shaping a different country down the road with all these decisions collectively, Devera?
We might well be, but, you know, I would like to inject something about public opinion because although I have no doubt that individual women may feel stigma if they don't have children, the public opinion data that I've looked at show that there's much less stigma and, in fact, maybe no stigma for women who don't have children for any reason whatsoever. There is a question on the General Social Survey that says, do you agree or disagree that people without children lead empty lives? Most people now disagree with that, whereas most people used to agree with it. Similarly, are children very important for a successful marriage? Our own data show that a minority now say children are very important for a successful marriage, whereas most people used to say they were. When we've asked about social change of various kinds, you know, what is it, a good thing, bad thing, or makes no difference to society that more women are not ever having children? Most people say it makes no difference or is a good thing.
This world just keeps on changing. Devera, we're out of time with the Pew Research Center. Laura Scott, author of Two is Enough. Lauren Sandler, one and only. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.